Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams. Joining me is my co-host, Robbie Helene.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Are we both co-hosts then?
I think so. I mean, unless you're establishing your superiority as the primary host.
Primary host?
And then I'm the secondary host.
Well, it's because I'm greeting. I guess when you greet, you feel like...
That's true.
The reality is we'd rather have two co-hosts or any version of hosts than what we had last week, which was no hosts.
It was a no-host week.
It was a no-host week. I feel badly. That like ended our consecutive streak of 412 episodes, straight episodes without a miss.
I don't think that's accurate, but
I'm just going off of
nobody's here to fact check.
Yeah, there's no, we've already established we have no fact checkers. No, but it did, it felt strange. And, so I guess, you know, we can dip back, you know, past week too, if you want to. But yeah, I don't know. I feel out of practice here, especially with you. Cause even though you haven't been on the podcast in like 3 months,
I mean, years, I think, years since I've been here.
Yeah.
I've heard I've been talked about on the podcast.
Well, but I haven't. Jeff talked about you.
Jeff did? Okay.
Yeah. I defended you.
We'll discuss that later.
I defended you. I think he was just trying to usurp you.
So Jeff.
Trying to move
in. So Jeff.
In your seat. He seemed like he was getting really comfortable. Actually, that's not true.
For those of you who know Jeff, that is the exact opposite of anything Jeff-ish.
Yes. I know. I need to make sure that's clear because somebody's going to think like, well, that Jeff guy sounds shady.
That guy sounds like the worst.
No,
he's the best.
Yeah. It's irony. It is me. I'm the worst. I'm the one that makes all the problems.
Too far.
So speaking of too far, sermon.
Oh, okay.
Wait.
Speaking of too, I had no idea where you were going
too
with
far.
That. I was, but it made me nervous.
Let's talk about the Super Bowl halftime show. Okay.
Why, dude? Why?
Just kidding.
Why would you open that door?
Yeah, that's fun.
Let's close that door quickly.
Close that door.
Moving
quickly.
Right along.
Acts chapter two.
So yeah. Sunday was great.
Thanks. Yeah, it was great.
I like what you did there. Yes. Go ahead.
Was it Pat? Or like a practice?
Were you just trying to talk over me?
No.
Okay.
That was actually an accident. So this passage was interesting because I have taught on this passage probably. Maybe more than any other passage.
Really?
Probably. Especially because when you factor in number of times I've spoken about church planting you know, all those different things, that this passage comes up so frequently when you're trying to get back to basics how do you start a church? What's the point of a church? What should a church look like? You know, you're going to go back to this passage in Acts when the church began. So... It is a passage I've spent a ton of time in, and so it was very interesting to try to think, okay, well, all right, what does the Holy Spirit want said about that this time in this context with these people in this,
So what's something that you felt like was different than your typical approach? Because I know you didn't just get up there and do your typical Acts 2 sermon, like this was fresh. You spent a lot of time working through it, praying through it this week. And so what was something that you felt like stood out to you this time or felt particularly practical to our family?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it really was the point of being fully devoted because in the past, when you're dealing with it in a church planting situation or with, you know, so often we would go back to that passage when we had house churches and non-believers or brand new believers. And there you're kind of going through here are the rhythms that they were in. There'd be a lot of focus on these rhythms. We need to spend time together. We need to be devoted to the word and what does that look like? And how do we pray together? Those different facets. But what I was struck by was that, you know, you can do all those things and the church has gone through different iterations. It's very different when you're talking to a group of brand new believers about these habits because they typically have kind of that devotion piece. Like they've just committed themselves to this thing that is brand new to them. And so now they just need the help of some of these habits to get put into. Well, it's different when you're talking to an established church where a lot of those habits have been in place for a long time, but sometimes the heart towards those kind of wanes. Just like, you know, I think a lot of people have that experience. You know, if you're working in a brand new job, your energy level is high, but yeah. you're learning how to do the different things. Your excitement level is high and you're learning how to do the things. Then you get the things, kind of the rhythms down, and then maybe you forget kind of the whole reason why you were doing it, or the heart, the excitement that you attacked it with. You know, we say that about marriages. So you see that a lot in the cycle of marriages. Like, there's a reason why you have the whole newlywed phase where everything, you think everything's great and everything's just, you know, and then you, over time, that can shift for people. Mm. And it, you have to work harder. You may be better at the rhythms of marriage, but maybe lacking some of the devotion and the heart towards it. So that was the big thing. Mm. I just kept being struck by this, that they were fully devoted. They fully devoted themselves to these things.
What would you suggest to someone who says, yes, I'm feeling that. I was excited when I was a new believer, and I was fully invested and involved, and that has kind of waned. To some people, I've actually heard some people give the advice of, well, that's just what happens. Like, that's the normal Christian life. That's just going to happen to you. I don't think that's the best advice, because it reminds me of Revelation and the church to Ephesus and Jesus' complaint about the church is, you have lost your first love. So it's not supposed to wane. Jesus says that's a problem when it does that. So how would you encourage somebody to try to get that back? Because it's different than saying, go back to what you were before. Like, you don't tell a newlywed, oh, just be like you were, or not a newlywed, but someone who's been married for a long time, just be how you were when you were newlyweds. Well, you can't, because everything's new and everything's fresh, and now you know each other and you've experienced life. So it's going to look different. So what does it look like now for me to kind of reignite some of that devotion?
It's a great question. I think the big thing is to engage in the mission of God. It's to step out in faith and push yourself to do things that feel uncomfortable, like stretching, never feeling like you've arrived at things. Whether that's, whether that's you've always given a certain amount and to stretch and to give more, or you, maybe you've been in the same small group for a long time but God has opened some doors with some non-believers or with brand new believers that you could pursue and say, you know what, I'm going to spend time with them and try to share the gospel, or attach yourself to somebody who is doing that. The reason for all of that is because it shakes you out of a faith that you can manage on your own. Because ultimately that's what I think happens is, over time, we create for ourselves a form of following Jesus that is very manageable,
yeah,
which is very doable. One of the things I would think of is, it's like if you're training for a marathon, you keep growing, you keep pushing yourself to be able to run further and for longer. But if you just kind of stopped at a certain point and then said, okay, well, I've arrived, and now I'm just going to maintain this, well, you're going to create something that isn't all that difficult anymore for you. Like, what was hard when you first started on day one is not the same thing that's hard on day 20, you know. Or if you're lifting weights or something, you if you want to grow in something, you have to continually push yourself beyond your comfort zone by definition, because otherwise you just stay in your comfort zone. Yeah. And I think for a lot of Christians, we do things that were at one point took a lot of faith to kind of step out to do something. Like, the amount of faith it takes for somebody to just come to a church, walk in the doors of a church, yeah, that's a huge step. We've had so many new people lately, and the one thing that I'm always amazed by, and I typically share it with them, is just how much I admire their courage to walk in for the first time.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
after you've been coming for a few years, that doesn't take a lot of courage.
No.
To walk in those doors. It's kind of like the first time I spoke to Lauren took a lot of courage. The first time that I asked her out on a date took a lot of courage. Doesn't take as much courage to go over and talk to Lauren now. After
no, well, I should hope not.
No, yeah. So, like, in our 20th year of marriage, right now, it doesn't take as much courage.
Asking her if she wants to get dinner together should not be a stressful
right
circumstance.
But there are things that could be, and there are things that push me out of my comfort zone. And when I seek to love her well, and then, and yeah. I need to continue to do that. So that's the, that's all just to say, pushing yourself, go out of your comfort zone and step out in faith. And then when you see God move and work in that, that rejuvenates that excitement. Because what was exciting at the beginning was seeing the Holy Spirit work.
Yeah.
And so you see him work when he does things that you're like, I couldn't have done that on my own. I didn't orchestrate that.
Hmm. So settling into a manageable Christian life sets me up to potentially miss what the Spirit is doing, because it's kind of like doing the exact same workout every day. Like, I'm just right. doing what my body can do. So it's not actually growing anything or changing anything, because I'm just doing what I'm capable of doing. And so my Christian life rhythm becomes just as mundane. And so I'm not being stretched. I'm not being put in positions where I have to depend on Christ utterly. And then, which means that I don't get that same sense of satisfaction and excitement of seeing him come through in those circumstances.
Right. And that workout thing, I think that's a really good metaphor that is helpful, because you think about the couch to 5K or whatever, your first step towards that may be to get up and walk for 5 minutes continuously.
Right.
But nobody trains for a marathon by walking 5 minutes a day, every day.
Right.
That's never going to get you there. And at some point that's going to become very manageable. And if you don't up that, or the whole, when you see people grow in their ability to do pushups and they do one and they add one every week, well, you have to add one. Doing one pushup a day will not make right. you able to do 100 pushups. It'll allow you to do one, and two's probably going to hurt.
Yeah.
And so that is a really, and I think we just have that in our culture of feeling like the sense of arriving. There's the sense of like, well, I'm a mature Christian now, or I've been a Christian for a long time, therefore like I'm in the advanced track. Mm. And we can look at other situations and think that I'm not supposed to be in awe or wonder anymore. And that's a sad place to be.
Man, something has broken significantly if my habits are diminishing my sense of awe in the Creator God of the universe.
Yeah.
I need to sit on that for a little while.
Well, fortunately, you're in a format.
We don't have time to do that right now. Yeah, so I'm gonna make a note. So that
no, we'll
I can
wait. We'll
sit
wait.
In
we'll
that
just
later.
Sit here. I really thought you were going to say something else, and I'm like, the radio background for me is going dead air, dead air, dead air. They just switched to 102.9. That's why you don't want to hit it. They just switch. Oh. They switch stations.
They switch stations on this? All right. They probably switched stations a long time ago. So if they're still hanging, then they're probably okay with seconds of Robbie's silent contemplation. Sorry about that.
So yeah, that's the idea that, so that goes back to that kind of original idea, that devotion, and just kind of checking our own hearts. Like, am I devoted to this fellowship? Am I devoted to the church family, or do I see it as an organization that benefits my spiritual growth? That's a help in my spiritual growth. Cause I think that's classic view of the church in our culture today, is I see the church as a resource to help me grow in my personal faith.
Which I think when most people hear that, they would wonder, what's wrong with that? That sounds like a good thing.
Yeah. Well, that would
so
be
what's
like,
wrong with that?
It would be like me saying that the purpose of my marriage is I see my wife as a resource to help me better myself as a human being.
That sounds much ickier.
Yeah. Now, I would say, of course, she does that.
Right, of course. And the church does
right.
serve as a place to
yes, it
grow
is a,
you spiritually.
We are a resource right. to help people grow in their faith. But that is not, I would not say that, you know, my children. So yeah, we've often said if you're a parent, it's common to say that children are a very sanctifying presence, because you see reflections
Indeed.
Of your own sin and all that. And those are all true things. But if you were to say, what's the centerpiece of being a parent? Like, what is it really, what's the value of being a parent, or what, what's the point of all this if I said, well, my kids exist to make me a better human being? Yeah, that's pretty awful, actually. And so I think shifting from that, and that is so deeply rooted in us.
Yeah.
It's so deeply rooted in us and in our culture that we barely can see it. It's such a blind spot in our culture. It's one of those things that people from another culture that are not affected in that same way would look at it and just think, how in the world could you, how do you not see this? How do you not see that the culture of just kind of bouncing around and looking for the most entertaining sermon or the most entertaining mm-hmm. worship team, you know, or the most programs or any of these different things that we just kind of think like, well, yeah, it's normal. Like I just, that is not at all what the church is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we miss out on a lot when we don't see that devotion, that they had, that they're fully committed to being the people of God together.
That's interesting. That reminds me of a quote I heard just last week from a pastor in Iran, where evidently the current fastest growing Christian revival is taking place in Iran, mm-hmm. which I had not heard because nobody's talking about that. And I feel like we should be talking about that. But one of the things that one of the pastors in that movement mentioned is, he said very kindly in the most non-accusatory way you can say something like this, because it is rather condemning, but he said that the Western church has fallen asleep. That for a large part, we have simply fallen asleep and don't realize the eternal realities that are all around us, that are affecting us, that are affecting people around the world, that are affecting the kingdom. And that his hope, his prayer is that we would wake up to those realities, because I think he would agree with what you said earlier, that we've just sort of gotten accustomed to a certain comfortable rhythm. And meanwhile, we have brothers and sisters around the world who are experiencing a very early Acts experience of the Holy Spirit transforming hearts and lives and communities in the midst of persecution and incredibly difficult circumstances around them. And so to them, they read Acts, and this isn't a, how do we get back to this? They're reading that and going, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we're experiencing. And are oftentimes wondering why does it seem like our brothers and sisters outside of this, who are in a place of comfort and resources and could be of great service to us, don't seem to even know that we're here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's an important critique to hear. We see this in a common human experience. There are people, so like when parents grow up poor, for example, and you see this all the time in our culture, parents who are people who grow up poor and then find success, you know, they build a business or they have some kind of career or whatever, and now they have money and they have kids who grow up under having all the opportunities and mm-hmm. all the money. And their big concern often is, man, my kid doesn't know what it's like to be hungry. They don't know what it's yeah. like to have to be motivated, to have to make it, or else, you know, so it's both this thing that you see as a blessing is also a curse.
That's right.
Because you would never want, if you have the means and the opportunity, you'd never starve your child just so they would feel what it was to be hungry.
Right.
You would never, you know, sabotage their getting into a college just because they've had opportunities, you know, at a good school or whatever. But you also would be worried that, man, that they would not grow up, that they would grow up maybe a little soft or a little mm-hmm. like just unaware of how the world actually functions, unaware of those realities. And I think that's what the pastor in Iran is saying, that you're just kind of asleep. You don't, mm-hmm. you don't realize how big of a deal some of these things are. And so we are often in that situation. We have to say this all the time, that the answer isn't for the American church to burn all of our books.
Right.
You know,
right.
And stop using the internet to distribute sermons and stop having so many resources. I don't think that's the answer. That can feel like it could be the answer every bit as much as the parent could just say, all right, we'll just cut up all their credit cards and have them have to make it on their own. Well, that's okay in theory until your kid's in trouble. And then guess what? You're going to help them, like, because you're not a monster. And so right. I think similarly, we just need to be aware though, that that is as much of a, an obstacle in our faith as it is a help. And I think if we are able to turn that outward and to see the resources and the money and all that stuff that we have, to see it as a way of blessing others rather than kind of blessing ourselves, I think that's a big step in helping that. So the wealthy man, there are billionaires in our culture who live like they make $50,000 a year.
Yep.
And you don't even know who they are a lot of times. You don't even have any idea. But they just live that way, and then they just use that money to bless, you know, others. And man, can you imagine if the American church did that? Can you imagine if instead of undertaking a $300 million building campaign, they just said, you know what? We're good with this facility. Right. How about we plant, I mean, for $300 million. I mean, you could plant,
oh my word.
I mean, a billion or more churches, like easily. Right. Like it's across the globe. Like you couldn't even count the number. You could exhaustively plant churches at that point. And I think that would be something that we could do. I don't know. We kind of got off on a tangent there. I don't even remember how you got on Iran and what's going on there, but oh, Acts 2.
Acts 2. Yeah. Well, and I think if we can come full circle, if you'll allow me.
Yes, I would I'd love for you. Lots of people would love for you to do that.
I think it, you referenced it in your sermon when you addressed the reality that we can be right and still be in sin. I thought that was such a profound and helpful reminder that just being right about something does not mean we aren't in sin, and even doesn't mean that we're not in sin about that thing that I hold the correct position in. So in what ways are we resting in the fact that we hold the right beliefs, we hold the right opinions about those things, but are not walking in the obedience that those things demand, that those things call us to? And so we are losing a bit of that sense of awe in God, because since we're not walking in obedience in those ways, we're not seeing the results, the miraculous results of walking in obedience in those ways. And on top of that, Christian brothers and sisters around the world are not benefiting from the blessing of us walking in obedience to those things.
Was that a question?
I don't know. Did it start as a question?
I don't know.
I don't know if I landed that plane exactly. It was a... Do you have any follow-up thoughts or disagreements with sentences?
You know, I'm with you on that. I think it's a really critical... Yeah, I think... Well, and I think where that relates is that we somehow have this false theology that because our country has succeeded in so many ways... That must be God blessing us because of our faithfulness to him. And we need to realize that the faithfulness of the church in Iran the situation that they're in is not indicative of the amount of faith in the church there.
Absolutely. I mean, call back again to the letters of the churches in Revelation.
Right.
Like each of those letters are... to various circumstances, and typically I would guess each of those churches was surprised to get their letter. Either Jesus is saying, I realize everything seems awful around you, but you guys are awesome. Like they were probably surprised to hear like Jesus thinks they're awesome because they're going, well, we're under persecution. This is right. Terrible. And there's other people that he straight up says, you have a reputation for being alive, but you are dead.
Yeah.
You are dead. You have no faith whatsoever, even though everybody thinks that you are so faithful. So
Which is hard. I mean, again, this is so difficult, but in some ways in the American church, we are like the classic trust fund babies. Like that we just kind of, we grew up under a legacy of faith of generations before, where there was, you know, persecution, there was challenge or whatever, but so much has developed in that, that to grow up as a Christian in the United States is pretty cushy. And so all of us have grown up. There's not a single person alive today in our country who did not grow up in a, who grew up in a persecuted state. In that, if you were born and raised in the United States as a Christian, you don't know. We don't know what that's like. And so the faith. So again, it makes us unaware of sometimes of bigger things at play, because we think that kind of what we're experiencing is normal. And then we get this false idea that we're somehow like an advanced church because of that. And I think that's the big thing that I think would surprise most people in the American church, is if you're just like, we're not advanced. We are advanced in worldly ways. We have more money, yeah, more resources, bigger buildings, all that stuff. But if you're talking about any other spiritual metric of, you know, where is God moving and doing, you know, miracles? Where are more people coming to faith in Christ? Where do we see examples of just biblical faith in biblical proportions? We're kind of lagging behind, you know. It reminds me a little bit. Remember back in the way back in the 80s and the 90s or whatever, when we were losing our lead in math and science?
Yeah. Yes.
And it took a decade for educators in America to even believe,
right,
that we were actually losing ground. Like, there used to be debates over, well, but how are you measuring that? Like, no, it's just total denial, because we're resting on our laurels. We're looking back and saying, yeah, but this is the home of the Industrial Revolution and all these different, right, things. Right. But that was a long time ago, you know? Right. And so to look at, you know, people escaping here for religious freedom, yeah, that was a long time ago. You know, and we're just in a different state, in a different era right now. But that doesn't mean that we don't have something incredible to offer. But I think that's what our brother in Iran is saying, is that if we're asleep, if we wake up and realize the church across the globe is seeing incredible growth in the most unlikely of places, or what feel like to us the most unlikely of places, and we have the ability to contribute and help and minister and comfort, yeah, in those, if we would just see it and turn outward.
Yeah, the response to that, the response to acknowledging what has been given to us and your definition of cushy Christianity is not, I don't think, should not be shame. Mm-mm. or regret, or like something is wrong, but to acknowledge that and say, wait a minute, we actually have this amazing resource to steward. We have this thing right in front of us. And so it, you know, it's realizing, feeling like, oh man, what could I possibly do to help this poor guy? And then reaching your pocket and being like, wait a minute, I got $100 bill in here. Hey, let's go get some lunch. Like suddenly realizing I have the resources because God chose to place us in this place, in this time, in this context, that instead of just resting in the comfort of that, of saying, wow, what an awesome privilege and responsibility that has been given to us. How can we steward this well for the kingdom? How can we walk in the kind of obedience that Christ calls us to in a way that allows us to say, not just of our own church, but the global church, and none of them, and nobody had any need because they all had everything in common.
Right. Yes. Taking that to a global, which I wish I would have had time to do that, to say this isn't just here locally, but right, it is global. Like our brothers and sisters in Iran, like we should be considering, how do we support? Because you see that in the New Testament, where Paul, you know, he's writing, some churches supported him to be able to go and share the gospel with other churches, yeah, and with other places. And then he didn't have to rely on the places that he was ministering to support him, because other people were supporting him. And we need to do that more and more. And I think that then goes back to the idea of, well, how do you increase the devotion? Well, that's part of it. Part of it is to widen my stance and realize that I'm a part of a worldwide church.
That's right.
It's not just right here. There's lots going on right here in my community that I can be a part of that would increase my devotion and my awe and my wonder. And then looking globally and seeing that, and then realizing, you know, to your, what you're talking about, saying that you can be right and still be in sin. That is a heart stance.
Yeah.
And for so long, I mean, one of the things that has plagued the American church has been this worship of knowledge, this thing that Paul says puffs up, you know, this idea that being right about something is what matters most. And as long as, and that gets looked at in a vacuum, as if I can, as long as I'm right, then I'm most of the way there. And then if I can be right in a loving way, that's what kind of bumps it up a notch. And what you see all the time in the New Testament, especially, but also in the Old Testament, is that to do the right thing or say the right thing or believe the right thing with the wrong heart nullifies it.
That's right.
It's not just slightly less better.
Right.
It's filthy rags.
Yes.
And we just need to be reminded of that. I need to be reminded of that so that what we have to offer other countries and other churches, the church in Iran and other places, is not our vast amounts of knowledge. What we have to offer is comfort. I think financial help is something that we can certainly offer, people resources. But we also then can learn from them in their faith. Like, it's not,
oh yeah,
it, not in a way, not in a patronizing way of like, oh, isn't that cute that they have that faith? Like, they spend some time. If you've never had the opportunity to spend time with a Christian who lives in a persecuted country, you will walk away. I guarantee you will walk away feeling like you are just with a spiritual giant. And they could be a brand new believer.
Yep.
They could have like no education at all, and you will walk away thinking, wow, my faith is nowhere near that, and I want it to be. And so I think, you know, embracing that and just being, acknowledging it for what it is, and then saying, okay, well then how do we then steward what we have been given? Because we were placed here for a reason. And so, man, all that, this was quite the tangent from the sermon, but it is this idea of being, if I'm devoted to that, the only way that all happens is if I reorient my life around this purpose and mission and identity.
I love that. I love that. And if you're listening to this and you're thinking, okay, so that's running the marathon. What is my 5 minutes of walking around? Then we want to help you with that. We want to help you take those first steps, so that, you know, doing what we're able to do, empowered by the Spirit now, so that a year from now, we're doing things that we never thought we were ever going to be capable of. So we want to help you in that, and we need to know if you want help. So,
and I know you're doing your wind-up spiel, like you're landing the plane. And I just grabbed the...
And you love grabbing
the handles and like, here we go. But here's the... One of those steps is to really fully invest in a local church family. So you may be listening to this and you don't live here. You don't go to our church. That would be one of the first step is to say, okay, this is meant to be done in community. I can't be fully devoted and conjure that up just in my own self. Like, I don't have... the lure of consumerism and comfort and all that is just too strong. We need to be around other brothers and sisters who are also pursuing that same thing, so that when I am weak, another is strong, and vice versa. And that we start to kind of be able to together see the kingdom way as the normal, and catch that as a vision. And so if you need help, you know, here, if you're here and you're part of our church, then we want to help you connect into deep community here. But if you are in another area and you're saying, I don't know where to go, you can let us know. And we would love to help. You know, we have the spiritual gift of being able to look at church websites and quickly being able to,
it's a miraculous gift.
It is. It's a, you know, and quickly look at it and say, okay, this would be a good place to go connect, and here's who are you, what you want to look for, and here's who you want to connect with. And because there's just no substitute to that, there is no substitute to being a part of a local body of believers who are going to pursue Jesus together. There you go. That now
That's
I
good stuff.
I'll let you land the plane.
Do we have clearance to land?
Yeah, clearance to land. You've been cleared for landing.
All right. We're bringing it home. We love you, church. We are grateful to serve you and to serve alongside you. And until next time, grace and peace to you.